Well, welcome to 2017 and episode 61 of the Hunt Backcountry podcast. Since it's the first episode of 2017, I thought we'd mix things up. Instead of giving this week's giveaway to a reviewer, which we always appreciate, I want to hear from you about 2017. What's one thing that you would love to see from this podcast? It could be a guest, a topic, or anything that comes to mind. We want to hear your feedback to make this podcast as great as it can be. So email us to podcast@exomountaingear.com with the thing that you want to see us cover in 2017. And those that email us that feedback will be entered into a giveaway, which we can announce in a future episode. All right, this week's guest is Ryan Lampers. Ryan is a hardworking do-it-yourself hunter from the Northwest who's been at it for decades and has had incredible success. We speak with Ryan about this year's mule deer hunt that he got to experience in Nevada, as well as some of the non-resident specifics about hunting in Nevada. We also cover a big passion of Ryan's, and that's health. It's the time of year when that's on the minds of many of us with the new year, and so health is clearly an important topic not only to hunt effectively now, but to be able to hunt effectively for decades to come. Ryan has some great experience on the health front, and it's inspirational and helpful to hear from him on that. Also be sure, as you'll hear about, to go check out Ryan's new podcast, Hunt, Harvest, and Health, over at his website, huntharvesthealth.com. All right, on to this week's episode with Ryan Lampers. Well, Ryan, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you guys?
Very well. Steve, what's going on, man?
Not much. Sitting upstairs, listening to my baby cry downstairs and hanging out.
That's what I'm doing. Daughter's sick and downstairs crying and throwing fits.
How old are your kids, Ryan?
I've got an 18-month-old or 19-month-old now, little girl, and then I've got a 7-year-old daughter.
Nice. Yeah, you're in the thick of it, man. That's fun.
Yeah, a couple days after Christmas here, and unfortunately got a little bit of sickness going around, but we just had a blast over Christmas, and she got spoiled as usual. So
yeah, that's fun. Yeah, it seems like there's always something floating around Christmas. My wife kind of has it right now, so I've been trying to shun her away. And
yeah. I know. Well, my 7-year-old's got it, and the problem is my younger daughter, she wants to hang all over Big Sissy, and it's like, how do we keep the baby off of her when she's sick? We don't want her to get it too, but it's almost impossible.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, just to get the ball rolling, we were just kind of joking before the show that we're all three pretty quiet, laid back, kind of reserved guys, but not to throw you into the ringer right away and make you talk about yourself, which I know you love to do, but just to give our listeners some context, kind of introduce yourself and give us some of your history in the hunting side of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm born and raised here in Washington State. I grew up in a little town of Snohomish. Me and my wife, we've been married for about 20 years now, and we got a place out in Granite Falls, and so we've lived out here for a long time, been in the same house, and I cut my teeth in hunting a long time ago. My dad was a big hunter, just grew up in a hunting family. Everybody hunted, everybody fished. Our business kind of revolved around fishing, so, you know, when you're in the fishing world, you're kind of involved with a lot of hunters as well, and, kind of cut my teeth on bird hunting when I was younger. Wasn't really big into the bigger, the big game, the deer and elk yet. Didn't really get that started until my teens, mid-teens. And then elk came, shortly after that in the early, about 20, early 20s. And so I've been a hunter my whole life. I've spent a lot of years, up in the woods chasing muleys. That's kind of my number one. It's hard to choose between elk or muleys. I get that question a lot. What's your favorite? I guess if I had to like pick one thing that I would do, it would probably be high country muleys. It's just got me. It's got me addicted. So
it's a little bit like picking between your seven year old and your 18-month-old though, right?
Yeah. Not impossible. It's one of those questions I hate to get asked because I have to start thinking about it, and it's a tough decision. But I just really love mule deer hunting. Spent a lot of time in the woods of Washington here in the alpine country. And, you know, we don't really have, you know, what's known to be great mule deer. In our state, we're not one of the Western states that gets a lot of talk. You know, we're not Idaho, Montana, Colorado, Wyoming. We're kind of on the smaller side. Our public land isn't as vast as some states is. But you know, I live in a state here where there's not as many hunters as those other Western states. So, you know, getting away from people has always been fairly easy here. And, so, you know, we were able to, get up into the backcountry and spend a lot of time up there. Fortunately with the business, I'm in, I get plenty of time in the fall to get up in there and get my scouting in the summer. And, we got some great animals in our state. And, you know, I enjoy going out of state as well. I've always hunted Idaho and Montana, pretty much get over there every year, after Washington is done. And just lately I've started kind of venturing out from there and, you know, kind of playing the game as you guys do. It's the draw game, looking to get into other states, and got into Nevada this year, which was just an absolute blast. That was one of my bucket lists, and I got that checked off, and now I want to get back there. And it's like, you know, so many things and so many options, but definitely got a big old bucket list of things I still want to do. But up until this point, I've mostly just chased mule deer and elk, and that's kind of been my go-to, and I do it. Fortunately, I've just been real lucky to be able to do it a lot and, have a little bit of success doing it. So, yeah, that's kind cool.
Yeah, I'd love to dive into that Nevada hunt. Obviously some great potential in that state, some awesome bucks come out of there, but it doesn't seem like it's on necessarily the top of the list for some guys. You know, it's, you know, many more guys are looking at Colorado and, you know, sometimes Idaho, Wyoming, things like that. I would love to just dive into Nevada and get your perspective and what you learned by, you know, A, pursuing that tag, and then B, how that hunt unfolded. So I guess kind of first things first, what was it like, the process for you as the non-resident? What was the draw process like? Were you after that tag for quite a bit, or how did that play out for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of how Nevada worked is, I've been putting in for it, for Nevada for a number of years. I think for elk, I've been putting in for a lot more years than I had been for deer. I've got a pretty good amount of elk points racked up, and you know, just knowing the size of the elk coming out of Nevada, I wanted to hopefully draw on here in the next 10 years, but never know. As far as deer, yeah, I had a few points built up, and I kind of came to the conclusion this year, this last season, I was talking to a buddy of mine, Dan Staten, and we were talking about, you know, getting in on a hunt together, and so we started kind of racking our brain, and I told him, you know, I really wanted to get to Nevada and just do a hunt. It doesn't have to be a hunt that's super hard to draw. It doesn't have to be in one of the top 10 areas. It's just, I want to put in for one and that, you know, I'll probably get drawn, and I'll put it down my, you know, as my number one choice. And it was just, I put in for a unit that there was a lot of backcountry, a lot of wilderness, and wasn't super known for giant animals. And that was fine with me. I just wanted to get down there and see it, and just kind of experience that country. I've just seen so much through social media and videos and, you know, hearing about it and, you know, listening to guys like Southcox and these guys that are just, they dug it for years. So we kind of went into it with that mindset, just let's just put down a hunt. So I picked one out that I thought had opportunity to get away from people. You know, pretty decent numbers of deer overall. And there's a few good ones, that they see in there every year. Just not one of those real hard to get units. So, kind of had a high hopes of drawing it. And sure enough, we drew it. Now, you know, so the plan was we were going to go down there together and hunt it. It didn't work out as well as we thought. I was over at a train to hunt nationals kind of in the opener. And as you guys know, Nevada opens on August 10th, which is, about 20 days earlier than I've ever been able to hunt mule deer in my state. So that alone was a big, you know, part of why I wanted to go there. It kind of opened up the season. I wasn't going to lose anything, and I just kind of added a really cool hunt. So August 10th was super enticing. But yeah, it opened up August 10th, and I wasn't able to get down there until I think the 14th or the 15th. And Dan had gone down, and he had already put a few days in, and I just had another commitment in Utah there. So I got over there, and he had done some scout. We did a lot of research, you know, did a lot of stuff on Google Earth, and I talked to as many people as I knew down there, folks I had met, just locals and guys I'd met through Train to Hunt. Actually, I did a Nevada race down there, and some guys down there really knew that country well. So I just kind of used every avenue I could to get any information I could. And it really worked out. Got some great little tidbits and nuggets from guys, and they kind of pointed me in a certain direction. And it just kind of gave me a starting point to start picking apart Google Earth. So that being said, we got in there, and Dan had spent a few days, and he was seeing some bucks. But it was one of those units. It wasn't your typical, like, classic bow hunting. It wasn't the perfect country for bow hunting. It was up 10,000 to 10,500 feet, but it was more like the Quakies, and, you know, it's just aspen, big groves, and not super conducive to kind of what I'm used to. But there was pretty good numbers of animals, and I was surprised, you know, the quality I was seeing right out of the gates. In fact, the first animal I saw was just a bruiser, and I saw him first day in, first evening. And I almost got him that first evening, which would have kind of been, I don't know, it would have been a kind of a bummer, but it would have been awesome at the same time.
Right.
So it was like, you know,
the hunt's over.
I know. Oh, man. I don't know what I've done with myself at that point. But
Steve's really good at doing that. He's just like, every time he goes out, it's like first day. He's just opening day. Just get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never really had that kind of thrown in my face where it's like, oh, man, that's a bomber. And do I just spend more days up here and see what's around? Or I don't see bucks like that in Washington too often. So I did make a play on it, and I had taken some pics with my phone scope there, and I was looking at him. I was like, man, that is, my eyes aren't playing tricks on me. That is a great buck, and I should probably go for it, and I'll kick myself if I don't. So I went after it, and, you know, long story short, I didn't end up getting him that night. I came really close. I got 55 yards and, right above him on a boulder, and it just didn't work out. I had a tree right where his vitals were, and he kind of bebopped down. I just didn't have a shot. So, you know, I really wanted that buck. And after I had a chance to really look around, I saw one other great buck. Gosh, he was really heavy, deep forks, had a kicker off his right side. He's a well over 200 buck, one of the biggest bucks I've ever seen. But he was putting himself in a spot that was just no way I was going to be able to get in on him. So I really focused back on that initial buck that I saw. And, long story short, 6 days later, I saw him again. That was the next time I saw him, and ended up getting in on him, and he bedded in the exact same spot. He had disappeared for all those days and never came back to that basin. And I'd really kind of looked in every single adjoining basin, up, down, side to side, everywhere. I was just really wanted to relocate that buck again. And yeah, when I did, I'd been sitting on that basin for a few hours, and lo and behold, I looked down, and he's 150 yards from me, feeding out of the same little quaky patch that he came that first night. And he took the same route and bedded in the same bed. And I just put a little bit different approach on him, and got to within 40 and made a perfect shot. So I ended up getting that buck that I saw the first night anyway. So it worked out.
That's
awesome. I'm so much gladder it worked out that way versus taking him that first night. I got to see so much more and had a lot more experiences. And, you know, I got to see a lot of elk and just kind of what that country offered. And it was phenomenal. So
yeah, Best of both worlds, get the buck and get the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I was truly blessed on that trip for sure.
Yeah. So I'm curious, just, you know, because it was your first time hunting Nevada, right?
Was, yes.
Yeah. It seems like it obviously is a much different country than certainly Washington, but was it different than other out-of-state hunts that you had had? And in what ways was it not what you expected? And, you know, how did you find yourself adapting or learning lessons along the way in hunting that area?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was really, it was completely different from what I've hunted. I really haven't hunted any high desert. Spent most of my days, you know, I've hunted wide open, you know, like Eastern Montana style country and coulee country, but I've never been in a high desert hunting that 10,000 plus feet, you know, open sage and quakies and this and that. And I've never really hunted quakies. So we don't have quakies here in Washington and where I hunt, but, so yeah, definitely a lot of lessons learned on this one. Obviously the glassing is, getting advantage, and it just, the country's really a lot more open. So, in that respect, you know, I loved it. You know, I could get advantage and just pick it apart, you know, for hours, versus what I'm kind of used to here. And that's, you get a little opening up top at like 6,500 feet and, you glass the crud out of it and move on to the next one. We just don't have the open spaces here. So, yeah, it was completely different. Now, one of the challenges that I saw when I was there and I was completely not expected is, when I was picking apart Google Earth, I didn't notice all the cattle in this area. And that was one thing that it never even crossed my mind was I'd be dealing with moo cows up there. And I was just surprised, you know, I guess most of the summer there was nothing up there, but then they pushed up into that country. And it kind of, I think what it did, it kind of pushed a lot of the elk down, out of certain areas. And then it was crazy. There's just cattle everywhere. And that was definitely, a shocker for me. I was not used to hunting around cattle. So, not expected. Now I've heard guys do have run into that, but definitely the areas I hunt, I just don't, there's no cattle anywhere. So, but that was a challenge. So a lot of the watering holes or, you know, just little seeps and springs, it was pretty easy to identify them and find out where the watering holes were because there was typically cattle around them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other part of what I learned there is, you know, I've always heard, you know, guys focus around water and sit water holes, and that's something I've never done here in the Northwest is I don't, you know, there's water everywhere. So, you know, locating water is easy. There's water in every drainage, up, down, everywhere. And so down there, what I really noticed was, obviously that the deer were always heading to water in the evening. And, it would have been pretty simple to kind of sit at one of those seeps and mingle amongst the cattle and kind of stick a buck that way. That would have been one way to do it, I guess, but it didn't really interest me. So, I just kind of focused my attention away from those springs. Now I did find myself kind of, you know, eyeballing the seeps and seeing what kind of critters were going into them. And, boy, it was like clockwork every evening between 3 and 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, a lot of every critter around was heading towards water. So, but you know, to be expected, it was pretty warm. So definitely something Now, I know that's probably pretty typical that most guys find in other states. It's just not something I deal with here in Washington. We just don't have that issue of water. You know, if you're sitting on water here, you're sitting and sitting and sitting, and you're not going to – there's no advantage there. They could be anywhere. So.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like wherever you're sitting on water in your area.
Pretty much. Yeah, there's a lot of water. I mean, east side of Washington's real similar. It's a drier climate, but there's basically, you know, it's high country and a lot of creeks, and it's just not a factor. So, but yeah, definitely a lot of, distinctive, you know, differences between where I've been used to hunting the alpine stuff versus that high desert. So, you know, that was kind of another part of, you know, just kind of living off out of my backpack out there has definitely had to keep keep in mind that I had to always have water with me and have enough of it. So I carried around a couple of good bladders that I could really just not have to drop down to get to that water, and I could kind of stay up top, and that was a huge advantage down there. So
yeah, it's amazing when you're backpacking how water just becomes, I mean, in certain areas it can almost dictate not everything you do, but such a major part of just day-to-day life.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a must. It's kind of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
It depends on water. So yeah, I never ended up getting the opportunity to hunt with Dan down there. I know where he had gone in and hunted. He camped right next to a spring, and it was a great spot. And he had to duck out of there before we really got to hunt much together, unfortunately. But yeah, he was in one of those areas where there's a little bit of water and it's just a perfect spot, and he had good advantages and all that. And I kind of moved out of that area to try to get away from the moo cows, and kind of found them everywhere. But yeah, there wasn't much water up top where I was, for sure. It was pretty dry.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool to hear, man. It's Nevada's, I mean, I don't want to say it's a sleeper state by any means. It doesn't seem like it comes up as often as some of the other states, but there's opportunity there for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was super shocked that, for a real easy to draw unit, I went down there expecting it to be similar, more people, not as many animals, not the quality. And I was completely shocked when I started seeing some of the bucks I was seeing, and, finding, 24, 25 inch, 4 points, 3.5, 4.5 year old bucks was pretty darn easy. Now they weren't always in great areas. There was a lot of quakies, like I said, and they get into those quakies and they could be pretty tough to put a stock on. So it was really dependent on where they were bedding, and, kind of picking out areas where if, you did come across a buck, you'd have a actual opportunity to put a move on him and get a stock on him. Cause otherwise, if I would have stayed kind of on the western side of this range, I'd probably see a lot of bucks, but I wasn't going to get a whole lot of opportunities at stocks, just because they were kind of moving back into the quakies, and I really didn't want to deal with, still hunting quakies.
So. Yeah, you definitely got to pick, I think some people get the habit of, if they find a great buck and he's in bad country, it's going to be really hard to hunt. I definitely always try to focus on bow huntable country. Like you're saying, with they go into a quakey patch, you're pretty much screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I know when I was on Google Earth, I'm looking for rims and kind mm-hmm. of edges and sharp drops and stuff like that. Opportunities where you can get good advantages, and there's going to be some topography there that you're going to have a shot at these things. So yeah, it's fun to look at them all day long.
Your moo cows comments are killing me, man. I'd hunt in Nevada probably 2009, and they were my freaking arch nemesis. Every stock I did, a cow busted me or screwed something up, and I despise cows with every ounce of my body.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. And it seems like when you're trying to get somewhere, I don't know what it is about cows. I was cursing them and everything. But they just stay in front of you. It's like, come on, just move beside them to go through. And for some reason, they just get running and they keep on trucking, and they just, they find a way to annoy you. So
my very first out of state hunt, totally green, didn't know anything, heading to Colorado to hunt elk, and we packed in good ways and everything else, and spent a day or two at the Salvation, and we're finally like, man, we're going tomorrow, we're going high, we're going as high as we can get. I'd previously scouted this area of the mountain, and we make this trek and really come out to the first, high open meadow, and I'm looking across, and I'm like, oh, I see something right away. I was all stoked, and I'm like, it's black. And I'm like, am I going crazy? And so sure enough, I pulled my binoculars, and here, I forget the elevation, but I think I want to say it was over 12 for sure. And sure enough, whole bunch of cattle grazing. And I had no freaking idea. I was just totally dumbfounded by the idea that here at, 12,000 feet on a mountain in a wilderness area, there's cattle. I mean, just blew me away.
definitely, you know, now that I know it happens, I guess I'll be thinking about it next trip. But man, I was completely shocked that I was seeing cattle there.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, in this episode, we want to cover a few things. One, that Nevada hunt, freaking awesome buck. I'll have to post the picture with this episode for you guys, and it's cool to hear about that, so we appreciate it. But, you know, as we come to this time of year, as it worked out, you know, with this episode hitting right with the new year and is timely, something that's on a lot of people's minds and something that you're certainly into and wanted to talk about was kind of the health aspect of things as well. You know, you kind of have the tagline on your profile of hunt, harvest, and health. So what do those three things mean to you? I mean, obviously the hunting's self-explanatory, we've been there and covered that, but how does that tie into harvest and health in the big picture for you, and how is that a part of your life?
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, you know, the health aspect is, as I get older, it's all the more important to me. You know, I want to be able to do what I do, you know, until I'm 80, 90 years old. So, you know, me and my wife, we're really health conscious. And, you know, I can't say that when I was 20 or say when we first got married that I was as health conscious as I am today, but it seems like every year that goes by, I pay attention to it a little bit more. And I just found myself getting immersed in it and learning as much as I can, you know, about just keeping your body, you know, in shape. Obviously that's one of the number ones. And then also, you know, what we're putting into our body. So we're very, you know, we're kind of food oriented, me and my wife are, and we do a lot of healthy cooking and experimenting and, put up our own food. And, this time of year, we're just kind of reaping the benefits of what we put up this summer. You know, side dishes to go along with all the meat that was harvested. So, you know, I grow a massive garden. It's probably a little much, but, I find myself just loving, kind of being more of a do-it-yourselfer, you know, not just in hunting, but also in all other aspects of my life, in our lives. And, that, you know, I know a lot of people kind of when they try to explain hunting as to why they do it, it all comes back to food. And it's a really, you know, food is obviously one of the most important pieces to why we hunt, along with the conservation aspects and all that as well. But I think food, doesn't just stop the meat part of it. It doesn't just end there. You know, we're all pretty conscious, you two are, of what you put in, as far as having a, you know, a nice lean organic meat. And there's also all these other things, you know, all these side dishes that you go, that go with it, you know, whether it's a clean starch or sweet potato, you know, all the veggies and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, throughout the summer, I grow this giant garden and I've built an enormous greenhouse and, it's a 30 by 12. Wow. So now there's reasoning behind this giant greenhouse. And one of it was I used to just grow a garden and I would kind of, with how the season would work, you know, once the weather gets warm enough, you can start planting seeds. Well, what that does is that kind of puts you into late springtime and you're planting all this stuff. And what ends up happening is all your food kind of comes to fruition midsummer to late summer. And I don't want to be putting up food late summer. I want to be scouting. I want to be hunting. So I always found it super irritating that, you know, all this stuff, all this food that was getting ripe and I had to leave and go hunting. And so it was kind of a waste and I didn't have time during hunting season to kind of put it up and preserve it and this and that. So what a greenhouse does, it extends your season. So I can start it a lot earlier in the season, you know, get everything started and well on its way. So once the soil gets warm, I can grow it and have that hopefully all done by July. You know, I can get a bunch of food put up, canned, you know, all of the greens turned into powders and everything to where come August, I can just spend my time scouting and hunting and not having to worry about losing all that food that I grew. So, that's one piece. And I just see it as it's just kind of an extension of, you know, being a do-it-yourself hunter. I love being a do-it-yourself foodie, I guess, food guy. I just love every aspect of knowing what I put in. So, you know, I find that I just try to stay away from anything boxed and try not to go to the grocery store as much as possible. And it's pretty, you know, it's so simple, really. There's so many things you can do, you know, to add to, you know, the lean meat, just with a simple garden. And so I find myself, you know, just really getting into that. And that's kind of added to our level of health, I believe, and taking in a, you know, an organic, healthy, you know, nutrition and all that. So,
yeah, that's awesome. How did, like, obviously when, you know, you kind of mentioned those things weren't as big priorities for you as you were younger, but how did that transition take place? And for listeners who are, you know, they're looking to make a change, whether that's because it's New Year's or not, or they just know they need to make a change to become more healthy. Like, in your mind, what's some of the low hanging fruit? I mean, obviously not everybody's going to go build a giant greenhouse at this point, but what's some of the low hanging fruit, like small changes they can make to, you know, live a more healthy lifestyle, not only, you know, to be getting better shape and be a better hunter, but just, you know, I love what you mentioned about the longevity aspect of it, that, you know, if you want to do what you love to do for a long time, you got to take care of your body to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, kind of where the transition started for me, I was probably in my mid-20s. And, you know, I always kept myself in fairly good shape, you know, not crazy. I wasn't Cam Haines style type shape, but I always just tried to maintain a level of fitness. And, you know, doing that was great, but I was always finding myself, you know, especially at the end of a hunting season, I'd just be wiped out. My joints hurt. Sometimes I had a year where it was taking 2-3 months for my joints to get back, my legs, my knees, my hips, and that was not comfortable. It just kind of planted this seed where, man, I gotta change some things, because coming out of a hunt season, you know, after packing out some critters, my body was just shot, and a lot of that had to do with obviously what I was eating while I was up there, but you know, I think a lot of it also had to do with what I was eating prior to that, and also after that, you know, for the recovery. So, you know, it just seemed like, you know, I needed a change. And my wife's a naturopathic doctor, so it was pretty easy for me to just kind of pick her brain. And you know, she obviously implemented a lot of things and changed kind of the way I ate. I kind of just started cutting out sugars and anything inflammatory that was in health, which is, I think, you know, soft tissue and joints. It's just like, that's kind of the foundation. Us hunters, you know, we got to have our legs, we got to have our ankles, our knees, hips. We got to have those things running smooth. So, you know, I found that all of a sudden when I really changed my diet, kind of went away from anything quick, easy, loaded with sugar, too many carbs. Man, I just felt better. I wasn't getting the pain after a workout. You know, after a long mountain bike ride or something like that, I wasn't sore for 2 days. Added a lot of clean fats and ate a lot more vegetables and just kind of changed a lot of things that I ate for better digestion and this and that. And it was pretty obvious. And I'm a pretty stubborn dude. So, and I'm a skeptic. And so, you know, I always kind of question whether eating all these greens and, you know, people always talk about like kale, you know, as it's this magical thing. And my wife got me starting to eat it and I started growing it and this and that. And I researched all this stuff and figured out, well, stubborn as I am, I'm going to bow to the kale, because it's so dang good. It's like got all these minerals and nutrients. And you know, I definitely started, I picked my wife's brain as far as what can I do for my joints, you know, what's going to keep the inflammation down. And, you know, there's a lot to that. Sugars was number one, and sugars, not just as in candy, but, you know, cheap carbs and, you know, anything that's going to basically turn to sugar. And, started adding some things like a simple kombucha, drinking more probiotics and taking enzymes with every meal and this and that. And, get, you know, the food that you take in, you get a lot more out of it. And I hit a point where, yeah, it's probably like mid, late 20s. And I actually had a blood test. I just wanted to see, you know, why am I so dang tired and sore sometimes after a big workout? And, I've always been a big fisherman. I eat a lot of protein. I take in a lot of fat through the fish. And I got the test back, and it showed everything I was deficient in. All the vitamins, all the minerals, proteins. Proteins was one of those things I was deficient in, and that didn't make any sense to me. So, you know, we kind of dug into that and figured out, well, your digestion, you're eating it, you're taking it in. It's not getting fully digested. So I wasn't getting what I thought I was getting out of the food I was eating. And, you know, I kind of bummed that, or I was bummed about that, because I was like, man, all the fish and all the clean meat I eat, and I'm low in protein. How is that even possible? So we kind of tackled that through probiotics, enzymes, just eating better, greens, fiber, this and that. And lo and behold, you know, the next test I took, all my numbers were back up to good again. And I was actually, you know, my body was actually utilizing what I was putting into it. So I was actually getting that protein back. And it's just something that I had no idea, you know, your digestion, it could work like that. Like, you could be putting all this food in and just not getting it fully digested. And it's just not basically giving you anything. So, you know, kind of through that, it's just kind of evolved with all these little steps. So I just found my way, you know, found that I was eating cleaner, you know, keeping my digestion right, eating a lot more greens, fiber, and this and that. And it seems to have worked out. Now I feel great. I felt great for a lot of years now. And I know that, you know, the protein that I take in is getting utilized, and I'm getting something out of it.
Yeah.
Simple steps for guys to take. I mean, yeah, it's pretty intimidating to say go out and build a big greenhouse, but, you know, gardens are easy. It doesn't take a whole lot of space. You can just basically do a raised bed, you know, get some good soil, add a little raised bed and grow some greens, you know, whether it's collards or kale. Kale's super easy, and it's pretty good for you, and, you know, any kind of lettuce, spinach, yada yada. And the thing that I enjoy about it is putting it up to where you actually get to use it. So you can do, you know, you can actually turn it into a powder. So we drink a lot of smoothies around here, protein shakes and all that. So my dehydrator is always running in the summertime. I dehydrate a lot of the greens, cause I'd rather take it in that way than just eat it in a salad. So I just dehydrate the greens, put them in the NutriBullet or a blender and powder them up and just add them to everything. So it's a real easy way to take in your greens and get everything you need there. So pretty simple.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just one of those things. I mean, it's, you can get lost in the weeds on it, but to make, you know, to make, just begin to make better decisions towards a better lifestyle, it's just anymore, and, you know, in our day and age, if you just kind of like go with the easiest choice, which the easiest choice is always there. I mean, our culture just thrives on the easy choice and what's convenient, but man, nine times out of 10, that easy choice is not the right choice. It's not the good choice.
How often do you hear about another recall on food? You know, it seems like it's gotten pretty consistent, and I got a family now, and I don't want to, you know, my girls to get sick and, you know, from just something I put in their body. And, you know, basically if it's in a box, it's not real. It's kind of how we look at it. So if you can grow it or just, you know, purchase it, something of good quality and, you know, obviously the meat and the vegetables and starches, it's so easy. I mean, so easy to grow it that, but no, I know a lot of guys don't have a little plot of land or have the room to do that, but, just making better decisions at the store and, not getting the box stuff or kind of cutting out the carbs and sugars is a really easy way to kind of improve a diet, I think.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's pretty cool you have a wife who's a naturopathic doctor to rely on as well.
No, Yeah, I'd probably still be hobbling around sore all the time and looking like crud if I didn't have her. Yeah, she's helped me out a ton. So
yeah, that's neat. So, and you guys just recently launched a podcast kind of together, right? Well, can you kind of tell us about the goal for that, or kind of some of the content that you will be covering? I mean, does it pretty much fall along these lines of hunting and health, or what's kind of the content that you guys will be covering?
Yeah, it does. The podcast is called Hunt, Harvest, Health. So kind of what we're going to be talking about in there is kind of mixing a little bit of my life as well as my wife's life. So kind of her end of the spectrum is nutrition, health, food, things that, you know, we can do, kind of tying it into hunters, backcountry hunters, things nutritionally that we can do to kind of better ourselves. We're going to be talking about, you know, all the different things that you can go out and harvest, you know, wild edibles, mushrooms, little hacks or things that we do to kind of clean up a diet and I'm just going to mix a few stories, hunting stories in there it's just going to be kind of a fun thing that we've never really done something like this together. And like I was telling you guys, I'm not a real big talker. So having her on there, she's very outgoing and she's really good at this stuff and she's got a lot in her head. So she can really kind of fill people in on, you know, things that they can do health wise, nutrition wise, to kind of better their lives. And, you know, I find myself these days tuning into podcasts that, give me little tips or tricks, health wise that may help me in the future and kind of, you know, prolong my longevity in the mountains. And, every year as I get older, I'm in my 40s now, it's definitely, weighs heavy on my mind and I want to stay ahead of it. So I don't bonk at some point here and have to spend a year injured or anything like that. So, but yeah, it's just kind of our little project and, you know, I'm just going to be doing some blogging on there about hunting, you know, trips and kind of tips and tactics and stuff like that. But it'll be definitely more focused on hunting health and nutrition and things that we do in our lifestyle. We get a lot of questions about it, so we figured we'd just kind of talk about it. It'd be much easier and maybe somebody can get something out of it.
Yeah. What are some of those common questions that guys are tending to ask?
Boy, a lot of people are just asking about food, to be honest. A lot of guys want to know what foods can they add. And kind of like I was mentioning before, you know, with soreness or recovery, you know, what are the best greens to take in and what's a good way to do it? And also recipes, you know, a good recipe for wild game with greens, this, that, and the other. And, yeah, just a lot of health questions, surprisingly. I figured more guys would be asking me about hunting, but I find that more guys are actually asking about food prep and, you know, canning questions of all things. I love canning. So people are asking about, you know, what can they can and how do they can it and can you can venison and all these things. And yeah, there's a lot to it. Food prep is slowly become one of my favorites as I get older. Just, you know, everything down to what I'm taking into the backcountry. One of the questions I definitely get a lot of is dehydrated food questions. I've made dehydrated food kind of Chuck Mountain House and Backpacker's Pantry to the curb and dehydrated my food. So making a lot of meals, you know, good meals that you can take with you back there that are super light and still really nutritious, that you're getting more than you would get from a Mountain House or a Backpackers or any of those companies. So
what's your favorite one that you make?
Oh man, it's probably the most simple one, which is, I make a chili, like a bear meat chili, which is just super good. You know, on its own, and then I'll dehydrate it. And then I'll make a complete separate batch of spaghetti. And a lot of this, I can all my own spaghetti sauce. So everything out of the greenhouse via the peppers, the tomatoes, all that stuff, you know, I'll get maybe 50 quarts of spaghetti sauce, canned up, mid to late summer there. And then, I'll just make a really good, again, I use a lot of bear meat, and I'll get that made up into a batch, and then I kind of blend the two. I get them all dehydrated, and then I mix them together. So it's kind of like a chili mac type thing. Definitely the bear meat chili with the spaghetti as well is super good, and I love it. It's my go-to. I make a lot of rice dishes as well. Just the brown rice with, you know, again, whether it's elk burger or venison burger or bear burger, you know, doing a lot of rice dishes, adding a little curry for flavor and just a whole lot of vegetables in there. And it's just hard to beat. I actually look forward to getting back at night and kicking that that boil on and getting some of that good food in me. So,
what, bear meat specifically for high fat content, or just randomly what you use? Yeah,
it is. I love bear meat. I know some guys don't, but it's come to be one of my favorite meats. I think it's because of the bears we take. They're very, very fattened bears, and we get them all in the fall. We're able to get two here, so I end up with quite a pile of bear meat, and you know, just putting that into burger, and it's super oily and delicious. So I just find myself using a lot of that. And it's, you know, once you dehydrate it, after you've cooked it and then dehydrate it, obviously it's fully cooked. So it's got a really good flavor to it.
Yeah, that's something. I mean, it's come up again and again with guests. There's been a few who dehydrate, and every time I'm like, dang it, I need to get it dehydrated. I just need to start. It's just like one of those things that's like, it's been on the list for like 2-3 years of just get one and start playing around. I mean, it seems so silly to me that, you know, hunters of all people who are hopefully sitting on ample amounts of the best game meat you can get aren't taking advantage. Like, it's so silly. I have, you know, a freezer full of elk and I would go buy Mountain House. It doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Mark, it's so easy. It's like, even the most simple, I don't have any extravagant dehydrator. I've got like this little 8-tray, 10-tray Excalibur. It's just super, you know, it's inexpensive, and you know, you can just throw some parchment paper down and just go poor man on it. And it works so good. And yeah, there again, it kind of goes into the food aspect of knowing what you're eating, while you're back there. I don't know what Mountain House does. But I do know when I make my own, it's all out of my garden, and it's, you know, it doesn't have any junk in it, no anything in it that I don't know what it is, no nitrites or hormones or anything in the chicken or the meat. So, just kind of falls, you know, in line with knowing what you're taking in. And I find that back there, you really want to know what you're taking in. You want the highest, you know, nutrition that you can get. So,
yeah. Do you do anything special for packaging when you're,
I don't,
you just put in just a Ziploc bag?
Yeah, I kind of double it up. Once I get it dehydrated, I'll just run it into a Ziploc, and then I'll take that, leave a little corner open, and then I'll vacuum seal that.
Oh, okay.
I double up like that simply because once it's dehydrated, if you have any kind of a, you know, noodle in there, spaghetti noodles, quinoa noodles, whatever, you know, once it's dehydrated, it's got a little edge to it, and it will kind of puncture through. And once it's getting shuffled around in your bag. Now, I do know, and I've kicked it around. I was going to purge, you can just get on Amazon and get some of those foil bags that Mountain House uses, and they're pretty cheap. But kind of what I do is I just use my Jetboil. I just basically dump it in and let it simmer, and it kind of speeds up the process of rehydrating it. So, you know, instead of just putting it in the bag and or dumping the water into the bag and letting it simmer, I'll just dump the whole bag into the Jetboil with the water for a couple minutes, and it just jacks up the speed or the time of rehydration, so I can eat it a lot quicker.
Sweet,
that's good stuff. I need to do it. I'm going to do it. I'll announce it now so that I have accountability. Next fall, I will have my own meals in the backcountry.
For sure. Yeah, it's good.
So obviously, you know, the nutrition aspect's a huge aspect of health for you, but I know that you are, you know, you mentioned you're no like Cam Haynes or what have you, but you know, you compete and train to hunt. I know you stay very active, very fit. What does training look like for you? Does that kind of vary for the season? Do you train specifically for hunting? Do you train specifically for train to hunt events? Or are you just kind of, you know, trying to stay in good shape overall and perform in the field as best you can?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, it's definitely changed since I kind of got involved with the train to hunt guys. It's definitely changed. I used to just kind of keep it, you know, I'd vary it up. I'd mountain bike, you know, I just kind of take a little air out of the tires. I don't spend a whole lot of time. You know, like if I can get an hour in a day, I'm good. So I'll let the air out of the tires, go for a mountain bike ride, and that just kind of wears you out. Instead of having to ride for 20 miles, you can ride for 5 miles and get a lot more out of it. But then, you know, I do some running, not a ton, you know, 5 miles, 10 miles, and that's it. I'm not really running a whole lot more than that a day. And, obviously I do some weight training. I've got a little, gym here at my shop and able to get in there and just do some conditioning and weights. And I think just kind of keeping it, mixed up works best for me. Instead of just going to the gym, I'll do a gym day and then I'll go do a mountain bike ride and then I'll go do a a pack trip with my loaded down backpack and then, you know, do a run and just kind of vary it. Keeps the body guessing, I guess. And then since Train to Hunt, I've only gotten involved with this last year and I'm so glad I did. I wish I'd have been involved, you know, since it opened. I'm kicking myself for not getting involved earlier, but it was always a little intimidating for me. And, you know, I just didn't know how I'd do versus, you know, competing against these guys. But this past season I did. And, yeah, it's just a blast. It definitely changes the way you train. It really makes you focus, on your shooting, obviously. And I've always done a lot of shooting with my bow year round. I can't say I do it every single day, but probably the lion's share of the week I'm shooting my bow. And this train to hunt thing, you know, it's changed. If you want to be able to compete with these monsters that are running these things, you have to do certain things. You have to shoot really, really well, which is nothing, you know, it's nothing but good there. You can't complain about upping your game in the shooting department. It forces you to be able to pack with weight. So everything's kind of tied into hunting. You know, Kenton, the guy who started Train to Hunt, he's really set this thing up well to where it really, you know, it you're training exactly for what you need to be training for, as if you're going on a big mule deer hunt or any kind of hunt. You know, you're shooting with an elevated heart rate. You're taking on, you know, mountains with weight in your pack, and you're running through a 3D course, and it's just a really excellent way for guys to just get ready for the season. Now this year they've changed the format quite a bit. What it is, you know, it starts off the day with 20 targets. You'd go through a 3D shoot, and you know, you don't have a range finder, so you got to be able to. You got to train for that. That's one thing that, you know, I hadn't really trained a whole lot for, and now I do. Really just getting out there, and you just have to spend a lot more time out, you know, picking things apart and then, you know, picking up your range finder and seeing if you were right. So I find myself just keeping that range finder in my pocket and just walking around just daily life and eyeballing something and taking a guess and shooting with the range finder. And it just kind of really gets you focused for that. And, that's really helped me out a bunch. I love that aspect of it. It's nothing that I used to train for. I used to always figured out I'm just going to be able to pull my rangefinder up anyway. So, you know, I always have it with me, but, yeah, Train to Hunt is no rangefinder there. And then basically what it is, it runs through a challenge course. So it's going to give you 5 physical challenges. There's going to be some running involved, a couple miles of running with a weighted pack. You basically have, you know, anything from tire drags to sandbags, you know, step ups and sand over shoulders, get ups, burpees, all these kinds of things that you know, a lot of CrossFit guys are really good at. But it really does add to your level of conditioning when you're going into a hunt. So, yeah, I do find myself now I'm actually training for the next train to hunt challenge, which will start up, I believe, in May. And, so it's definitely, helped me in keeping my, my conditioning up for hunting season come late summer.
So what would you say to the guy who's, you know, been sort of interested or seen the events in the past, but kind of like you was a bit apprehensive or overwhelmed to get involved about it?
Well, I'd say put all those apprehensions aside, because I'm kind of a shy guy. I like to kind of sit back and watch things, and I don't really like to jump into things that I'm nervous about. Well, I went into it, you know, thinking, gosh, you know, this is going to be intimidating. And it was initially. I got there and started seeing these guys, you know, really good shooters and really good backpack guys and just muscle, you know, beastly guys out there that obviously spend a ton of time in the gym. But I found myself, you know, just being a hunter. I've done a lot of backpack trips, you know, spent a lot of time in the mountains, and surprisingly I did okay at it. So, you know, I think the level of support you get at these events it's unmatched. I mean, the guys are, what I always say, there's not a lot of egos at these things. It's just a bunch of really good folks that are encouraging you to do better. Whether you're just starting out your training, whether you're a little overweight or you're just getting into hunting, you know, if you come out and then do one of the challenges or one of the qualifiers, you're not going to get intimidated. You're going to get nothing but open arms when you show up to one of these events. Everybody, and I think it starts at the top. The guy that runs this, Kent Claremont, he's just a super nice guy. He's, you know, salt of the earth type dude. And I think, people kind of follow his lead, and, you know, from the guy on these events, they're just top quality individuals. And so what I've seen is, the guys that do these events a lot, they're super supportive. They do nothing but encourage you. It's helped me in so many ways. Just, you know, the fact that I've been able to meet certain people out there and, you know, get this support, and it kind of opens up a web of people for you that, you know, if you have any questions or training questions, there's some guys that are doing train to hunt that are, you know, top notch, and they're just, you know, a wealth of knowledge, when it comes to training and health. So, definitely it's not intimidating by any means once you actually get there and start talking to people and, going through these challenges. Now you're going to be working your tail off, and you're going to be, you know, you're going to be hating it during the event. But when you come across that finish line, everybody's there to greet you. Everybody's, you know, cheering you on. And it's at that point, it's not about trying to get podium or the top three finishes. It's just, you finished it and you did you gave everything you had. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's hard to describe. It's just you get a really good feeling when you get down to one of these events and you get to see the people that are involved and just hang out with, some of these, you know, first class dudes.
That's cool. So, These guys who are maybe interested in the first time, what are some tips they have for a first timer, whether that be like more on a strategy or just, you know, should they focus more on a certain type of shooting or a certain type of physical activity?
Yeah. So, you know, basically, you know, if you want to really go in and do your best at one of these qualifiers, hiking with weight is definitely high on the list. Now they've made these races a little less intimidating in that now there's not the amount of weight they throw in your backpack. So we're not doing 100 pounds anymore. I think the top weight is going to be 50 pounds. And what they've done and why they've done that is, they want to bring more people into it. Kind of found that a lot of first timers were intimidated. They didn't want to sign up for a race that may injure them, or, you know, hauling 100 pounds for a couple miles straight up is just not something they thought would be fun or just too hard. So, this year they've dumped that weight down to 50 pounds. And I think that'll help. That'll bring a lot of people who are kind of on the fence. They'll come into it and see that it's not all that bad. And, yeah, as far as training for it, you know, if you want to train exactly for every event, you could do that. Anything from dragging a tire across the gravel to, you know, doing your typical kind of CrossFit style get ups, you know, burpees, all these different things. But I think for me, shooting is always going to be number one. And I've heard it said many times by some of the best that do this train to hunt is you can't outrun poor shooting. So you could be in the best possible shape. You could be a monster in every which way. And if you have poor shooting, you're not going to win. You're not going to even come close. And shooting with an elevated heart rate. And that's as simple as you can go out and say, do 20 burpees and grab your bow and take a shot. Getting your heart rate elevated to a point where you're huffing and puffing and then take that shot. And I sucked at it when I first started it. But since I've been training for it, I've gotten a lot better. So it definitely helps out. And, you know, there's an aspect to hunting that will help you as well, you know, chasing elk around. If you're out of breath and you have to take that shot, I could see that it'd help you there. But, yeah, it's pretty fun. You can take a sprint, come back, grab your bow, take a shot. And now on the challenge course, where you got six arrows, you've got those challenges, and you're going to have six targets. You have to be able to go through an exercise. You're going to be huffing and puffing. You're going to be sweating. You got to be able to execute a really good shot. So I think, I think as far as training goes, that would be one of the top things to train for is that, you know, obviously be able to run a little bit. It's not very far. You're looking at 2 miles tops, but a lot of that is going to be hill. So it's going to be more hiking than actual running. They're trying to get away from running with weight, to kind of keep guys from getting injured. It's the last thing they want to have happen in one of these events is have somebody blow a knee or something like that. So they've tried to, basically just add hills to where guys aren't actually running with weight. They're having to hike. And there's still some guys out there that are able to kind of jog up a mountain, but they're just ridiculous. So,
yeah. Awesome.
So a little bit of running, a little bit of, you know, packing with weight and a whole lot of shooting is pretty much your top three.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, we're coming up on time. Where would you point our listeners to follow you, to check out the site, check out the podcast, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. We're iTunes, Stitcher, Hunt Harvest Health is the name of the podcast. People can follow me if they want to on my Instagram. It's kind of where I do everything. And that's Stealthy Hunter. It's STHEAL. So it's the Healthy Hunter. Any questions or whatever, they can get a hold of me there. I love answering questions on that. It's really gotten me in touch with a lot of good people. So.
Yeah, that's cool. Great. We certainly appreciate you taking the time to join us. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Ryan.
That is a wrap on this episode. Thank you guys so much, as always, for listening. 2016 was a great year, and 2017 will be even better, and that's all because of you. We really do appreciate the support for the podcast, as well as supporting what we do with Exo Mountain Gear. As always, you can contact us by emailing podcast@exomountaingear.com. And as always, if you're enjoying the show, we would love to see your review in iTunes or wherever else you might be listening to this. Thanks so much, and we will catch you next week.